IQ skill number 7, the magic of motivation. This is where you create the hunger and learn how to motivate yourself and others every time. As the famous football coach Vince Lombardi said, winning isn't everything, but wanting to win is. Motivation is everything to a great persuader. Motivation is critical not only for achieving the big milestone steps towards your objectives, but also for making all the little steps in between. If you're not driven or motivated, then not only will nothing be accomplished, but you will probably won't even get started. Motivation takes on a dual role in the world of persuasion mastery. Motivation is first and foremost about keeping yourself motivated. Then once you are consistently a self-motivated person, your focus turns to inspiring and motivating others to take action. Since great persuaders have mastered each one, this audio is about the mastering of both capabilities. Notice that I said once you are consistently a self-motivated person. Consistency is the key. We can think of countless examples of times when we've gotten really excited about something and felt gung-ho about it, ready to take on the world, and then what happened? After a little while, our enthusiasm, our commitment wore off. Great persuaders stay consistently and predictably motivated. You see it all the time. People go to a rah-rah, super motivational seminar, and they're ready to change the world. You can see it in their eyes, and they're going to make it happen. They're enthusiastic and ready to take action and make positive changes in their lives. Nothing will stand in their way. But then an interesting thing happens. A few weeks later, nothing has changed. Why does this happen? It's because we need motivation on a consistent basis. We have to understand human nature and the psychology of why we do what we do. Sometimes we're super motivated, and sometimes we can't even get out of bed in the morning. Why is this? So often we don't have a system or understanding in place to keep the motivation going after the initial spark. Motivation doesn't serve us when it comes exclusively in sporadic bursts. Understand, the initial spark is important, but then we need to make sure there's a way to keep the flame going. Motivation is another one of those key success skills that are not taught in school. Part of keeping the motivation constant is being honest with ourselves and realizing that our emotions, our circumstances, and our discipline will all fluctuate every hour and every day. It is inevitable that we're all going to have some bad days. You have to be prepared with a motivation safety net. You have to have a system. When your energy, excitement, and motivation are high, think through the ways you're going to keep the motivation alive on a consistent daily basis. Envision it as a steady stream rather than a big wave that hits all at once. This concept may sound simple, and it is, but it is its very simplicity that makes it one of the most commonly overlooked persuasion tools. Studies through the Persuasion Institute found that when persuaders were asked about their ability to motivate and energize themselves on a daily basis, over 50% felt it was a problem. I believe this statistic is as high as it is because people just don't realize that motivation must be maintained day by day, sometimes even moment by moment. A lot of our motivation problems or challenges would be remedied if we treated them like physical nourishment. We never say, well, I've had a big meal. That should do me for the rest of the month. Obviously, our bodies need nourishment day in and day out. Motivation is the same. Our greatest successes will always occur when they've been accompanied by clear and steady motivation. Long-term motivation means energy that is invested every day for the long haul. This definition is another reason our motivation fizzles. We live in a world where we want everything now. We want a quick fix. We want instant gratification and quick results. Not only do we want instant gratification, but we also want it with minimal effort. For example, if you were to ask a random group of people off the street if they wanted to be financially independent, to lose weight, or to even have better relationships, most everyone would say yes. But how many of them would be able to outline a detailed action plan they are actually following to make these things happen? Few, if any, I'd bet. This lack of follow-through is just human nature. When encouraged, most of us feel the sparks, but we don't ever actually get the fire started. Or if we do, we don't have a plan for keeping the fire alive. So what inhibits motivation? Well, All too often, the path to success, initially so clearly defined, begins to get blurry again. What is it that blurs the path or inhibits our motivation? We could all name hundreds of little things that get in the way. But lack of long-term success goes much deeper than daily setbacks, hassles, and frustrations. Take time to examine where all the detours come from. The self-doubt, the self-sabotage, the nagging, the negative inner voice, the inability to stick to the things you know you should be doing. Sometimes our lack of persistence stems from the fact that the required behavior is not part of our customary pattern. Other times it is because we're not doing it for the right reasons or in the right way. Sometimes it's because we're trying to treat the surface problem or behavior rather than an underlying issue. That is, we're treating the symptoms instead of the disease. Great persuaders, along with maintaining a positive outlook themselves, surround themselves with people who are just as successful as they are. One of the big reasons we don't stay motivated is because we unintentionally sabotage our own efforts, or we let others sabotage us. Sometimes we don't even realize this is happening. It's like we stand around dumping buckets of water on the fire, or letting others dump buckets of water on the fire, and then we scratch our heads wondering why the fire won't burn. What are some of these anti-motivation water buckets that are destroying your fire of motivation? Two of the big ones are mindset and the people we associate with. Take a look around you. Are the people in your life pulling you up or pulling you down? Are they encouraging or discouraging? How do they view your goals, dreams, and aspirations? Many times we give up simply because we don't have the support or encouragement from those we respect and love. This lack of support may be because they are being protective, or they don't fully understand the situation. Or they understand the situation and all its implications, but they just don't buy into it. Well, it could simply be jealousy and resentment. They didn't pursue their dream, so why should you get to? These types of folks hate to see others succeed because the realization of their own failures is so painful. However, for all those who see their lives going down the tubes and want to take you with them, there are also those who are successfully pursuing their dreams, and it is often these people who will encourage you to do likewise. Surround yourself by inspired and motivated people. Another strain on your ability to motivate yourself is your lack of dreams. Our dreams have become lifeless, or we've just given up dreaming altogether. But when our capacity to dream is lost, part of us dies. If you ever find yourself in this situation, you must revise and rekindle the dream. Be honest with yourself. Do you ever make up excuses for why you can't do it, shouldn't do it, or don't have time to do it? This is called self-handicapping. We sabotage our own efforts and desires by finding excuses and anticipating future failure. Deep down, we may feel this mentality is a safer route. The idea of success can be scary. It may mean sacrificing the old and familiar and embracing the new and unfamiliar. It will mean new commitments, change, and a few adjustments. You have to get to the point where the pain of your current situation outweighs the pain or pleasure of getting what you want. You have probably heard the overused example of keeping a baby elephant chained to the stake. The baby elephant tries to get away, but the stake is too deep. When the elephant reaches adulthood, it could easily pull out the stake, but it has long since given up. It no longer even tries. Dr. Martin Seligman, founder of positive psychology, calls this concept learned helplessness. Great persuaders take full ownership of their success, their failures, and their life. Let's stop with the excuses, the whining, and the belly aching, and take full ownership of our lives. If you tried hard enough, I'm sure you could come up with 20 reasons why you might fail. But these don't matter, because all you need is one good reason to be successful. If we allowed ourselves, we could spend all day and night finding excuses. In fact, I hear all the time in the persuasion world, I can't cold call. They just got lucky. I have a bad territory. They set me up to fail. The employees hate me. I tried and it didn't work. The marketing is outdated. I'm not good on the phone. The competition is everywhere. The product needs improvements. How do they expect me to compete with fill in the blank? I would be successful if I had that account. And of course, we all hear the company does not generate enough leads. If we are really and truly honest with ourselves, we may find that there are areas where learned helplessness prevails. This tendency is where you need to dream, and dream big. You've got to feel inspired to break those shackles. Remember, your inhibitions have only as much power as you give them. Like the baby elephant that has grown to maturity, the chain and stake are not a real obstacle. What's holding you back? What are the change and stakes in your life? What would it take to make you want to leap out of bed each morning? If we have dull dreams, it is difficult to stay motivated. Brainstorm a list of 20 things that excite you and that you are passionate about, and then proactively work toward putting those things more at the center of your life. Whatever form the discouragement comes in, you must fortify yourself and forge ahead. Think what would have happened if Abraham Lincoln had listened to his critics, or if Thomas Edison had taken to heart everyone who said his inventions were impossible. What if Bill Gates had listened to his counselors while he studied at Harvard and stayed in school? What if Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield had listened to over 100 publishers that turned them down for Chicken Soup for the Soul, which, of course, later sold millions of copies? There are volumes of similar stories. What is your story? Are you going to write it, or is someone else going to do it and write it for you? The main thing to take from these experiences is that you cannot allow others to suck the energy and motivation out of you. Let's get past our learned helplessness, our pre-excuse for failure, and decide on victory. Let's do it right now, because another critical element on the path toward victory is commitment. And as Johann Wolfgang van Gogh said, until one is committed, there is hesitance, the chance to draw back. Commitment has a lot to do with perspective. When you consider your personal perspective, do you see the big picture, or are you swept up by the whims of the moment? You have to make sure your perspective is rock solid, otherwise your commitments will be flimsy. We all know that when someone says, "I'll try," it'll never happen. "I'll try" versus "I will" are two different attitudes. With one, you are committing. With the other, you're leaving yourself just enough room for a way out. Make sure the commitments you make in a moment of excitement have the sustaining motivation to take you to the next level. Your commitment needs to be stronger than your moods. Let me repeat that. Great persuaders make sure their commitment is stronger than their moods. One of the key ways to make sure our commitment remains strong is to develop willpower and the ability to delay gratification. Walter Mischel, a psychologist at Stanford University, performed a study that has come to be called the marshmallow test. He invited groups of 4-year-olds into a room and gave each of them a marshmallow. He told them they could eat the marshmallow now, or they could wait 15 to 20 minutes. When he came back, those who had waited would be rewarded with a second marshmallow. Many of the children were able to hold out, but there were some that couldn't wait. After the study was over, they followed all the children to see how they performed in life. The results were startling. He found that the kids who were able to delay gratification were twice as likely to be successful academically, socially, and emotionally than those who could not. While in high school, the kids who exhibited willpower had better grades and scored 210 points higher on the SATs than those who had not. We all know that even for the strongest individuals, your commitment level or willpower is not always constant. Willpower is like a battery. As you exercise your willpower throughout the day, the battery power starts to decline. What drains your battery? Fatigue, negative emotions, low blood sugar, suppression of emotions, or peer pressure will drain your willpower battery faster than anything else. You need to be able to be aware when your battery is low. What do you need to do to charge your willpower battery? And here are some things you can do to charge your battery. Take a nap or go to sleep. Eat, or at least eat a snack, talk to a positive person, review your goals, your vision, exercise, take a walk, employ any type of humor, meditate, engage in any type of service are things that recharge that willpower battery. Comparing willpower to muscles in our body is another useful analogy. We know that if we use the same muscle all day long, it will be weaker by day's end and will need some recuperation and rest. Constant work, strain, and effort without time to rest and rebuild will drastically decrease the muscle's effectiveness and strength. Just as muscles need time to recoup and rebuild to regain and increase their strength, the same is true of willpower. If you keep exercising it throughout the day, at the end of the day, your willpower and your commitment will be weaker. One particular study gives more credibility to this idea that willpower may actually be made stronger if given periods of recess. Researchers had college students arrive to participate in an experiment regarding taste perception. At least that's what they thought. The students were instructed to come to the study hungry by abstaining from foods for 3 hours prior to their arrival. When they entered the room, they were greeted by the scent of freshly baked chocolate chip cookies. As they entered the room, they were divided into two groups. One group was told they could eat the chocolate chip cookies, and one group was told they could only eat the radishes. And one group was told they had to exercise willpower and only eat the radishes. They were then left alone to walk around the room as they waited for the researchers. Obviously, the radish group of students had to exercise their willpower to refrain from eating the chocolate chip cookies and only eat the plain radishes. After 5 minutes, the students were told they needed to wait for their sensory perception of the food to fade before performing a new task. This next unrelated assignment, or so they thought, was to solve a puzzle. Unbeknownst to the students, however, the puzzles were unsolvable, and the researchers just wanted to see how fast the subjects would give up. Remember that the researchers were suggesting that willpower and self-discipline would weaken just like a muscle in sequential tasks. In looking at the two groups, one that ate the cookies, requiring no willpower, and the one that ate radishes, exercising the willpower, the results proved interesting. The cookie-eating group worked on the puzzles for almost 19 minutes before they gave up, while the radish-eating group worked on the puzzles for only 8 minutes before giving up. In other words, the radish group, the one that exercised willpower, gave up 2.25 times faster than the group that did not exercise any willpower at all. And just a note, it wasn't the chocolate chip cookies that fueled the willpower, because they've done this with other non-food studies and that confirms the same point. When you exercise your willpower, the next moment you exercise, it'll be weaker if you haven't had time to regain composure and strengthen that willpower muscle. So let's talk about the desperation cycle. Why does motivation fail? As the Chinese proverb says, quote, better light a candle than to curse the darkness, unquote. One of the biggest criticisms of motivation as a persuasion tool is that the results often appear to be temporary. There is some truth to that notion, but only when motivation has not been properly utilized. Motivation or being motivated with the wrong things for the wrong reasons will never work. I call motivating for short-term results the desperation cycle. The desperation cycle describes our tendency to take the easiest path instead of the best one. We dwell in our comfort zones, places where we don't have to expend much energy in analyzing our surroundings. And in these zones, we live by habit and routine. As a result, we become resistant to change. We are unlikely to stretch or strive for excellence. Fear of the unknown and fear of making mistakes are also reasons why we stay in our comfort zones. As Mark Twain said, quote, a cat that steps on a hot stove once will never step on a hot stove again, but neither will it step on a cold one, unquote. The comfort zone is safe and familiar, but it keeps us paralyzed by fear and unmotivated to venture out. Fear, however, will creep into our complacency. At some point, we realize that we haven't accomplished any of the things we needed to do. Suddenly, we fear what we are becoming and where we are going as a result of neglect. As we contemplate our destination, we may panic, working frantically to make up for lost time. This frantic rehabilitation lasts just long enough for us to see exactly how steep the hill really is, how long the marathon will really take, and then our excitement begins to fade, lulled back into our comfort zone, numb to the stark realizations that had us panicked only a little while before. And then we're perfectly positioned for it to start all over again. And then we find ourselves in the desperation cycle. And here's a common scenario. Let's say you have a high school reunion coming up, but for the past decade, you've been enjoying some of life's finer food. And maybe it's those chocolate chip cookies. As a result, your pants are feeling pretty snug. You don't want to go to a reunion in this ample state. You begin to fear what it's going to be like to show up at your reunion looking this way. Panic hits, and you vow that you will lose weight before the looming event arrives. To that end, you starve yourself. You even start to exercise. The pounds come off, and you go to reunion a slimmer and more confident individual. Then you get home and think it would be nice to continue shedding the pounds, but you realize it's harder than you thought. You begin to overindulge again, just a little bit at first, and then more and more as time goes by. You let your exercise regimen go, the weight returns, and the vicious cycle starts all over again. So how do you motivate the unmotivated? Great persuaders are able to find and fulfill unmet needs and wants. Two of the major keys to knowing how to motivate others are discovering their needs and wants and figuring out how to fulfill them. Great persuaders know that not everyone can be motivated the same way at the same time. Many of us are familiar with Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. A renowned researcher and psychologist, Maslow proposed a hierarchy of needs that demonstrates the human needs we are most motivated to satisfy. The base of the motivation order begins with the fundamentals of life. These fundamental, life-sustaining needs must be met before the higher needs can be addressed. When lower needs are not met, the higher needs become less urgent. So let's start at the base. The physiological needs, food, sleep, and safety. Until those are met, nothing else matters. Moving up, safety needs, protection from physical harm. Next one, social needs, affection, companionship, and inclusion. Moving up again, ego needs, which is respect, status, and recognition. And on the top of the list, self-actualization needs. That's realizing one's own talents, gifts, and potential. As the more basic needs are fulfilled, they lose their motivating power. We then move up the hierarchy and target needs in other areas. For example, if running water is something we take for granted, then the need for a glass of water is unlikely to spur us to action. Conversely, if we can't meet this month's rent, then we are most likely not thinking too much about fulfilling our self-actualization needs. As Sigmund Freud said, quote, "A man with a toothache cannot be in love," unquote. To motivate effectively, be sure you address your audience's lowest unmet hierarchical need and then offer opportunities for that need to be met. Don't make assumptions either. They are often wrong. Talk to the person directly and take the time to hear and understand their needs and wants firsthand. What do employees want? What do managers think? And that's a big challenge. What managers think the employees want and what the employees want are two different things. Let me read you this list. The employees were asked, what motivates you? And in order, it was interesting work, appreciation of work, being well-informed, job security, compensation, growth and promotion opportunities, good working conditions, personal loyalty to employees, tactful discipline, help with personal problems. But when the managers ranked it, number one was compensation, which was number five on the employees list, but number one on the managers list. And then it goes to job security, growth and promotional opportunities, good working conditions, interesting work, personal loyalty to employees, tactful discipline, appreciation of hard work, helping with personal problems, and being well-informed. So let's talk about a motivation system. There are only two things that motivate us in life, inspiration and desperation. We either move toward that which inspires us, or we move away from that which fills us with despair or discomfort. Most people only use desperation's motivational energy. Any persuader can motivate an audience with desperation and worry. The problem is that motivation that is spurred by desperation does not last. People who are moved by desperation or fear are typically so preoccupied with what they are trying to get away from that they can't think of anything else. If you want motivation to last, you need to rely on inspiration, which is rooted in our emotions and vision. The positive results that come from using inspiration as a motivator are obvious. Inspired people don't need a carrot dangling in front of them to get something accomplished. They are self-motivated and don't wait for external factors to drive them one way or the other. Motivation is not stagnant. We all require different types of motivation. Every day, every hour, we will require a different form of motivation. Great persuaders know when, how, and what type of motivation to use not only as a persuader, but also in their personal lives. As Stephen R. Covey says, quote, "Motivation is fire from within. If someone else tries to light that fire under you, chances are it will burn very briefly," unquote. Great persuaders have mastered their ability to motivate different people with different methods. I'm going to go deep here to help you understand what exactly motivates people, including yourself. Let's talk about the system of motivation. You see, motivation does not exist between inspiration and desperation. That's your comfort zone. That is where we experience complacency. How do you persuade yourself or someone to move out of the center? Well, there's a couple different issues here. If you were to draw a graphic or quadrant, on the left would be desperation and on the right would be inspiration. On top would be internal and the bottom would be external, which gives you four distinct types of motivation. So let's start with the worst type of motivation, which of course is better than inactivity, but it's very temporary, which is external desperation. This is short term. Let's say you hate your job. You don't want to go to work, and you only go because you feel like you have to. This external desperation tells you that if you don't go to work, you will lose your job, you'll have no income, or you'll lose your home. This area of the quadrant is where most people reside. That is, they do things because they are forced to or have to. True fear is 4 times more motivating than discomfort. Fear is a powerful tool of persuasion, but it should not be your only tool. There is a time and place for the use of fear in persuasion. The next type is internal desperation. Let's take your job. Again, you don't want to go to work, but the internal desperation you feel convinces you that this is what needs to be done, that this is what you're supposed to do. In other words, you feel a duty or an obligation to go to work. You might feel obligated to show up at work because of a particular project you are working on. You might also feel a sense of duty towards your manager or coworkers to be there and help out with the workload. You still go, even though you don't want to be there. Your logic wins over your emotions. Watch, and you'll find that people who use desperation to motivate themselves are invariably unhappy. You will never be a true master of your destiny, nor will you be able to achieve the success you want until you emerge on the other side of the motivation system, which is inspiration. One type of inspiration is external inspiration. Here you feel moved by outside sources that inspire you to do what you need to do. Remember that inspiration is rooted in your emotions. Once you tap into your emotion, you will be able to propel yourself and others toward long-term permanent motivation. When your logical mind says you can't do it, your emotional mind takes over. In this area of the motivation system, you do things out of respect or love. That is, you go to work to provide the best for your family. You apply yourself to your job because you want to send your children to the best schools or you wish to buy a new home for your family. You are motivated to go to work by external things around you. Between internal and external inspiration lies commitment. That is, you go to work because you feel you have made a commitment to be there, and you are driven to keep that commitment. Now, the best type of motivation, if you're visualizing this, is internal inspiration. This internal inspiration is what we call passion. During persuasion, if you can get others to tap into their internal inspiration, then you will bring about pure long-term motivation in them. Now, using the previous job example, when you are passionate about your career, you are excited to go to work. Rather than seeing your job as a chore, you view it as doing what you love to do. You are changing the world and serving the people around you. What's more, you are dedicated with the passion to share your message, product, or service with the world. Great persuaders know how to use motivation. When you are persuading and you use the wrong motivation at the wrong time, it will backfire on you and produce the opposite results from what you intended. As Dale Carnegie said, "The road to a man's heart is to talk to him about the things he treasures most." Unquote. So how do we implement motivation? Great persuaders use every quadrant of the motivation system to their advantage. The 4 different areas of the motivation system can guide you in tapping into the logic and the emotions that will motivate each member of your audience. Just to review, remember, external desperation, internal desperation, external inspiration, internal inspiration. Some people can only be motivated in the short term, so you have to use desperation with them. When you tap into someone's passion, you have uncovered somebody who will fulfill your long-term call to action and who will willingly do what you ask them to do. He or she will be excited about your message and will comply with your request. One study had a group of college students spend almost 3 hours learning complex neurophysiology material. Half of the students were told they would be tested and graded after their study session. The other half were told they were going to put the material they had learned to use by teaching it to others. After the 3 study hours were up, the students were surveyed. It turns out that those who believed they were learning so that they could teach others were more internally motivated than those who believed they would be tested. As Dwight D. Eisenhower said, quote, "Motivation is the art of getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it." Unquote. So as a great persuader, you need to find the motivator that creates hunger. You see, in order to successfully motivate others or yourself, or to get someone to internalize motivation, you have to create a deep hunger or thirst. On your persuasive journey, you will find that people tend to get motivated for the short term, and they lose steam, and then they fall back into the rut they were trying to pull themselves out of in the first place. As a persuader and motivator, you have to understand what pulls people away from action and into inaction. What causes people to lose excitement, vision, and energy? Well, let me give you some of the common reasons. One is no passion. They are going through life using desperation as a motivator, or they haven't yet found anything that really inspires them. Another one is poor attitude. They have habitual negative attitudes. Their expectations and beliefs are not congruent with their goals. Then there's diminishing intent. They have previously been on the right track, but they've now lost their drive. They have forgotten the real reasons why they were motivated in the first place. What about indifference? Well, they just don't care anymore. They have lost the ability to express concern or to make a difference in their own life or the lives of others. Or they could be creatures of habit. They have not replaced their previous bad habits and have fallen back into old ones. Then there's the famous lack of persistence. They have given up too easily and have gotten stalled at the first obstacle. Some we see no sense of urgency. They have not set a time frame for achievement. The pain of not changing doesn't hurt badly enough that they've got to act now. Peer pressure. They have not found the support they need to resist the peers whose esteem they value. Could be lack of vision. They have sacrificed long-term success for short-term pleasure. Or lack of knowledge. They don't know how to make the necessary changes in their lives, or they are not doing it correctly. We also see a lack of confidence. Confidence comes only after action, knowledge, and success has been achieved. With many, it's no game plan. They are overwhelmed or waiting for everything to fall into order. They have no action plan. They want all their ducks to be in a row. Or maybe they really didn't want it. They don't want to pay the price. Their goal is only a dream and nothing more. They are using external desperation as their motivator, or they are living their lives the way others want them to. So people ask me, what is the formula? What is the motivation formula? How do you find that switch and turn people on? How do you get them to take action? Well, great persuaders systematically eliminate or overcome obstacles which stand in the way of their audience. You can apply the motivation formula to learn how it applies to each particular person. Here's the inspiration formula. If you can visualize this, it's want, time, reward, plus tools, over difficulty minus the time frame. That is the degree of inspiration. Might sound a little complicated, but when you see it on paper, it's very easy to apply and follow. The desperation formula is fear, time, consequences, plus do they have the tools, over difficulty minus the time frame equals the degree of desperation. So let's talk about this. How do you maximize the motivation formulas? Remember the first element of the inspiration formula? Want. Well, this concept is easy to understand. In order to successfully tap into your audience's motivation, one of the first things you have to understand is what they want. Want also includes what they need. What are their goals? What are they trying to accomplish and where they want to go? The second part of the inspiration formula is reward. In other words, is it worth it to your audience to take action? What is the reward for doing so? What are they going to get from such action? What is in it for them? Is it something they can fully understand the value of? Can they feel it, touch it, or taste it? When you look at the first part of the desperation formula, it starts with fear. Yes, sometimes fear and desperation are necessary to motivate people. Fear is something they are running away from. What are their concerns? What scares them? Or what are they worried about? Panic, anxiety, and what makes them nervous also fall into this category. The second part of the desperation formula is consequences. What is going to happen if there's no movement or motivation? What is the penalty? What is the cost of not changing one's ways? What is going to happen in their lives if they don't take action? As a persuader, you have to make the worst case scenario come alive in the mind of your audience. The rest of the formulas are the same for both inspiration and desperation. The next part of the formula involves tools. Does your audience have the necessary tools to perform the task you're asking of them? Do they have the competence to get the task done? Do they have the knowledge or intelligence to put your call to action into motion? Do they have the necessary resources, for example, transportation, finances, relationships, or even self-confidence to accomplish the task? Now we move to the bottom half of the formulas, where things get a little tricky. How difficult is a task you are asking of your audience going to be to perform? Or more importantly, how hard does your audience perceive it to be? Will they perceive it to be more difficult than it's worth? Can they see themselves performing this task you're asking them to do? Is it worth their effort? The last part of the formula is deal with time frame. Can your audience fulfill your request in the period of time you're asking them to do it? Will a long time frame cause them to lose focus and discover more obstacles to justify not completing the task you are asking of them? Do they feel that your deadline provides them with enough time, mentally and physically, to complete your request? Do they have the drive to stay on task until it's completed? When you have these formulas in your toolbox, you can analyze your audience. When you can understand each aspect of the formulas in regard to your audience's motivational level, you can customize your proposition so they will be motivated to take action every time. Another interesting thing we've noticed with great persuaders is what we call life alignment. Another way to enhance your ability to motivate yourself and others is to make sure all things are balanced in your life. Great persuaders lead a balanced life and keep everything in perspective. Make sure there is a balance in every aspect of your life. Imbalance can undermine motivation and cause inaction and unhappiness. Many times we quit early because of imbalance, even when we don't realize an imbalance exists. Even if it's only one area of our life that is out of whack, it can have a direct effect on the other areas of our life. Just as in a mutual fund, where one bad stock can pull down the fund's overall value, one bad error in your life can also have a disproportionate negative effect. Ask yourself these questions. Would I invest in my own mutual fund of myself? Would I suggest that my family or friends invest in me? These are hard questions to ask, but the answers to them are necessary as you get your life on track. Take a look at the stocks in which you have invested in your own life. What stock is pulling the rest of your portfolio down? Are you a growing mutual fund, or is your mutual fund losing money? Or is your fund stagnant? If you won't invest in yourself, who will? When we look at life, we have to realize that it is not lived in segments, but rather it is part of a greater whole. Every aspect of your life will either help or hurt the rest of your life. Our aim is to get all aspects working together to create a high-performing fund. Realize that you can't invest too much in one aspect of your life. When you do, you can get unbalanced, just like a tire on a car. Even too much of a good thing can lead to disaster. As you invest in yourself, you must make sure you are diversifying in the following six areas. First one is financial. If you can't take care of your financial needs, then you can't take care of your basic needs. If you neglect your finances, imbalances will ensue. We all know that the inability to pay the bills affects every aspect of our lives. Financial freedom enables us to find true balance in our lives. Physical. If you don't feel well, you can't even begin to think about the other aspects of your life. You need to have a health plan in place. Do you understand nutrition and exercise? If you don't, your lack of health or energy will drop the value of your own personal mutual fund. Then there's emotional. By our very nature, we are emotional creatures. Our emotions are like a thermostat that tell us when and where to make changes in our lives. You cannot allow emotions like anger, resentment, frustration, hate, and envy to control your life. You are in control. If you are not able to control your emotions, you will be unable to control your actions. Emotional mastery is essential to a balanced personal mutual fund. Intellectual. Personal development is what keeps you excited, motivated, and enthusiastic. We are best when we are continually learning and growing. Personal edification is something we need to achieve every day. That's because a lack of personal development causes us to become negative, cynical, and pessimistic. Spiritual. You have to be in tune with yourself and who you are and with where you are going. We are spiritual beings. We all have a spiritual side. You need to take time to listen to your inner voice and tap into your spirituality. And then last but not least, social. We are social creatures. Our greatest strength and well-being stems from our relationships. As such, relationships are an integral part of your happiness and balance. You have to have a sense of meaning and purpose to lead a fulfilled life. No man is an island in and of himself. You see, many times we spend too much of our time spinning our wheels and investing in stock that has no value or that is diminishing the value of our mutual fund. We get so busy buying what the stock society recommends that we forget to examine whether this stock is helping or hurting us. There may also be times when you need to sell a stock. What I mean by that is change a habit or belief because it's not performing. We always need to make sure that we are a growth fund and that we are continually investing in the right things in ourselves. If we neglect any one of the life alignment areas, our overall happiness and success will diminish. We have to make sure we are maintaining the balance in our funds. If your mutual fund is not congruent with your values and goals, you will feel out of balance. As we find balance, we create and find true happiness. So what is the underlying key? Motivation begins with a clear, passionate vision. Great persuaders are able to help others believe that they will succeed in what they are being motivated to do. No one likes to lose. The best way to overcome the hurdles of doubt and disbelief is to instill a vision of winning in your audience. Thinking we can win and seeing the victory in our mind's eye stirs our internal motivation. Olympic coach Charles Garfield has said that the highest performers are driven by a sense of mission. Great persuaders present a winning package to their audience. When people sense victory or accomplishment, they will make sacrifices and become energized to reach their goals. Somehow, they will find a way to succeed and win. Without a spark in your car of success, without a way to ignite the fuel, your car becomes immobile and inactive. Motivation provides the same type of spark as a fuel injector or spark plug. You can make the excuses sound so compelling, but they're still excuses. They're not results. As the Irish proverb says, quote, "If you put a silk dress on a goat, he is still a goat," unquote. Focus on results, not the excuses. Motivation is a true art. When you understand human nature and the role influence plays in it, you will not only be able to motivate, but you will also have earned the right to motivate and inspire others. So let me finish up with a fable about the dancing monkeys. A king had some monkeys that were trained to dance and perform. Being naturally great mimics of men's actions, they showed themselves as great students, and when dressed in their fine clothes and masks, they danced as well as any of the others. The show was often repeated with great applause until one occasion when a full of mischief audience member threw a handful of nuts on the stage. At the sight of the nuts, the monkeys forgot their training and stopped dancing. They then became monkeys instead of actors. Pulling off their masks and tearing off their clothes, they fought with one another for the nuts. The dancing show came to an end amidst the audience's laughter and ridicule. What's the meaning? Tap into your own internal motivation. Don't pursue the dreams of society. Start learning to own your dreams. Don't let the little nuts of life throw you off course.